You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts. Hello and welcome, everyone. Step into the China Shop. We've burned the doors down. We're just keeping it open 24/7 now. No, we're back here with you. Another exciting interview episode. I'm your shopkeeper, Dan, and with me as always is Kyle. How are you doing today, Kyle?
Doing good. Market's green. Plays are starting to work out.
Yeah. I'm coming off of 3 days in a row of gain, significant 5% or higher.
Are you back to even yet?
Oh, I passed even.
I don't think I am.
Oh, fun stuff.
Yeah.
I'm so excited today, Kyle. We are joined today by another member of the Trade Pro Academy, none other than Victorio Stefanoff. How are you doing today, Victorio?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me on. This is super exciting. This is actually my first guest appearance on a podcast, other than our own, obviously. Yeah.
Is it really? Oh, all right.
Oh,
good.
Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, so excited to have you. Wow. All right. Thanks good stuff.
Me. Hopefully we don't ruin the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, try to keep the insults to a minimum.
You're right. Oh, we'll keep them to the end.
You hoser.
And keep in mind, I'm Canadian. I get offended easily.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into the game?
All right, perfect. So I actually started trading probably like maybe one of you guys or maybe both of you, like a lot of people in college. I was in engineering actually, and I hated it. It just wasn't for me. Like I don't think I was that dumb necessarily. I got passing grades and whatnot. It just wasn't for me. I saw everyone around me like super into it, like building robots in their spare time, doing whatever. And I was just more interested in like making money, to be honest. It wasn't right. Even about like the stock market. It's more so, hey, these finance guys, they make a lot of money. I think I could be better at that than I'm at engineering, at least. And I started just like playing around, looking at stocks on like NASDAQ.com or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think my first stocks that I bought were either Apple or like Facebook, one of those like big tech, like FANG names. And I was just playing around with that, just putting some money in, didn't really have too much money. And I actually met George. So he's the CEO and founder of Trade Pro Academy. My dad met him.
Oh, you know George?
Yeah. We're.
I told you, Dan, those Canadians know everyone.
All right. We. It's a small place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my dad met him in a coffee shop, actually, and was like, hey, listen, talk to my son. He's lost. He doesn't know what he's doing. And George was like playing on his computer, like looking at some stocks. And he was at Scotiabank, one of the big banks here at the time. And I ended up talking to him. I was actually one of the like first actual members here at Trade Pro Academy, just going through the courses, you know, like making my way through it, started trading options. This was maybe 2015.
Okay.
Got my ass handed to me after the one does during the like it was the China currency manipulation thing that summer.
Okay.
So that I was doing really well. Like I had like 30-40% return on some student loans that I actually threw in the market.
Nice.
Oh, I love hearing those stories.
Yeah, just disaster. Well, like the student loans here aren't that crazy. Like I've heard like hundreds of thousands in the States, but like it was more so like towards like 10-15 grand, let's say, and that's right. Canadian, so it's like pennies on the dollar in comparison to the US.
Yeah,
but like I was up pretty handsomely, I would say, for a college student. I was like loving life. I'm like, holy shit, I'm dropping out, I got this,
right?
China manipulates the currency, destroys the market. I lose on top of the gains about 30% of the account, which isn't terrible.
No.
So took a drawdown and then slowly climbed back after that, and then took that account. I actually started day trading futures with it. So I said, I was swing trading options. I was like, enough of options. I'm going to go day trade futures, because that's where TradePro kind of turned the course, where it started day trading futures and created a course around that. Mm-hmm. So George pretty much taught me all of that. And then I was just picking up bits and pieces, like learning stuff by myself. And that was probably like 2017 or so.
Okay.
And then when it came to stocks, I didn't really invest or put too much money into stocks, very passive, like larger blue chips, until March, the crash, that's when I started getting more handsy into the stock market and going back to options, actually.
Just seeing that discount kind of made you want to get back into some of those names. Yeah, probably a smart move. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh my God, like Apple and whatever, like all the big tech names are down like 40-50%, whatever right. It was. I was like, okay, well, they have good fundamentals. They've got some good reasoning behind them. Like, I think these are going to rebound pretty aggressively, and started getting back into that. And
nailed
futures,
it.
Yeah, right. I didn't, like, everyone wishes they put more money into it, right? And I'm one of those people.
So, always wish we did more.
Yeah, exactly. I put like 50% of the account in towards the lows, and I was like, ah, crap, well, I should have just put the whole thing in naturally.
Right. 50% still pretty committed.
Yeah, that's risky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming from futures, like, all I know is high risk. So.
I have yet to mess around with futures. They kind of scare. I read a couple horror stories where people didn't realize how the lots worked and thought they were buying like $1,000 worth of something and lost their whole account in like 10 minutes.
All I have to say about futures is you better be trading with a stop. I don't care how big of a stop it is. You need a stop. Mm-hmm. Like, I love futures, great leverage, but I found more of a home in options because, again, when it came to the risk parameters, I would risk less but have a wider stop, if that makes sense. So I have a little more wiggle room, but I'm risking less, but obviously I'm making less.
Right.
So futures I'll trade on, like, trending days, like last Friday, for example. What was that, like May 14th, 15th? Mm-hmm. That was a good trending day, but usually I stick to the options. And from March, that low 2020, I really dived into stocks and options, and we've created a whole options segment here at TradePro. Before, it was mainly futures driven.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's pretty much the backstory.
Well, I noticed you post a lot. That's how I kind of found you. It's, we had George on the show back when we were first getting started.
Yeah.
So we're following him and then found you on there. And then I've been noticing a lot of the stuff that you've been posting as far as like your ideas in the morning. Can you kind of explain how those work?
Yeah, for sure. I swing trade and day trade options, swing trade stocks. I don't really day trade stocks themselves. I'll swing trade and invest in stocks. I'll day trade options. So like all those ideas that I post on a ugly looking notepad.
Yeah, I'm bringing back the notepad, I think.
Yeah. What you said. Yeah. An ugly looking notepad. I post like a few names, mainly SPY and triple Qs, because they're I know them best because I traded NASDAQ and S&P 500 futures for a few years, so I kind of know how they move the best in comparison to individual names. So I'll just post a level, like calls above certain levels and puts below a certain level, and then I'll post like what the pivot point is.
And, okay, so what does that mean? What is the pivot point?
Yeah, so the pivot point's the area where you're typically getting long above and short below. It's the area where there's a sentiment shift.
That's where you're expecting it to run one way or the other?
Yeah, exactly. And that's usually based on like either like a volume profile or like a automatically drawn pivot from a chart. Okay. So it's an area where there's like a crap load of volume where there's going to be a fight, like a fight in the market. So if you surpass it to the upside, then I'm expecting X amount of percent to the upside or whatever it may be, or to the downside, same thing.
Okay, so I see you lost your pivot point, then you have your calls, and it looks like calls above. So I'm looking at your morning one from this morning. You get a pivot point on the SPY of 14.55.
Yeah.
So now if it hits 4.15 and 80 cents, if it's running up above that, then that's your trigger to buy a call option.
Yeah, to a certain degree. So like above that level, I'm getting a little more aggressive with the calls. So what I've noticed is like a dynamic change in how markets move over the past few months. I'm sure you guys have noticed as well.
Yeah.
the volume has died out of the market, and I could attribute that to number one, fear, large institutions pulling out of the market, and number two, retail traders and investors getting blown out. The retail trader is losing ground and they're moving to different markets like crypto, for example. So things that would work before, like this example, so a long-winded explanation of why this works, but 415.80, for example, that SPY like calls above it. Before, that would be like a breakout level. I'm just breaking out. I'm buying the breakout. Now it's more so like, okay, well, sentiment's pretty bullish above that level. I want to see how it reacts before getting into it, right? If it's a high volume day, what I interpret as a high volume day would be about 10 to 15% of the average shares traded before the market opens.
Okay.
So on the SPY, let's say, I think the average is like 80 million, let's say.
Sounds reasonable.
So let's say like 8 to 9 million pre-market traded. I'm going to consider that like a heavily traded volume day. And there's going to be more so of a trend in one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So today with the SPY, it was like, let's say 2 million. I can't remember the exact number, 2 million. So that's kind of like crappy. So right. I would look at those levels that I throw up on Twitter as, okay, wait, that's a sentiment change. I want to see it above there and see what happened, right? So if it pokes its head above there and there's no real volume that comes in, for example, or there's no like stagnation, right? There's no pullback stagnation where the price just stops, then it's going to get like faded down.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are like more guideline levels. I just try to keep like Twitter and like social media a little more engaged and giving them kind of ideas. Because I talk in a morning room in like a Zoom recording, like, well, not like this, I guess this is different, but similar to this, but it's like a Zoom recording where we have like members from our community that would jump on and kind of like listen to Sarah, Chris and I, so like three kind of moderators, I'd say, that follow options markets and talk about, okay, well, this is a good level. I personally am entering calls or puts at this level. This is why. So like something like that. I don't really want to call it a signal. It's more so a like idea and qualifier. So I kind of want to help people like qualify their own stuff. Because I could drop signals all day, but like I don't know if people could get in and out the same way I do. So in my mind, I'm burning other people's money, right?
Yeah, that is sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's my favorite. No, it's my least favorite thing. People will say, what's a good stock to buy? Give me a good stock tip. And it's like, well, I could name a stock ticker, but there's so much more information you need to know to make that trade correctly. You can't just go out and buy it today and be like, hey, I'll make money.
You know what I tell people that ask me that, actually? I'm assuming that these people don't really know too much about the financial market. I just say, buy the SPY. Buy and hold the SPY.
That's what we always just say. Yeah.
Like, I'm not here to tell people to buy AMC or whatever it is, or Ford. Or I agree with you guys. Like, I'm not a financial advisor. I can't be liable for anything like that. Right?
No, our goal is just to get people to learn about it. We're not.
Yeah,
our goal is not to tell people what to do.
I'm pretty transparent about like my positions for the most part. If I think they're like less risky per se, and I'll disclose that as in, hey, like I am doing this. I'm not telling anyone to do this. This is my risk. This is where I'm putting my stop. This is where I'm putting my entry.
Is that what you're calling your lottos?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. That's what
I'm on Fridays or like maybe throughout the day where it's like, hey, listen, like this is kind of a gamble, but this is what I'm doing.
Is this now the community you mentioned, is that your Ecofin?
Yeah, exactly. It's just community.tradeproacademy.com. It's a public community where there are private rooms within, but the public community, I'll still throw my ideas and like chat with everyone in there if anyone has any questions. It's relatively new. We just made the switch from Discord. Discord was, I liked it, but it was kind of a zoo.
Hey, we use Discord.
Yeah.
So do I, but on different platforms.
Right. I'm glad to say our Discord is less of a zoo and more just an open pasture for bulls to run around and smack into each other.
No, well, we kind of promote it as a smash everything.
buy all dips.
All right. So what are the key indicators then that you're usually looking at when you're coming up with these ideas? You post your plan in the morning before the market opens, but where are you getting those points at? Are you analyzing yesterday's price movements or are you looking at the pre-market?
Yeah. So when it comes to day trading, I'm doing both yesterday's and pre-market. So you'll get like automatically generated pivot points, which I take into consideration on like a platform like TradingView or TOS, whatever anyone uses. Other than that, like some indicators that I use are like moving averages. These aren't like do or die, they're guide.
Right.
Whatever indicator anyone ever uses, like if they tell you this is like the golden indicator, the holy grail, they're probably wrong.
You're right, yeah.
Even I use indicators and I don't like believe them 100%. I mainly use market structure, so how the market actually moves on like a 5-minute or 2-minute chart for day trading. Mm-hmm. And that involves just like general support resistance levels, like gaps, pivot points, then obviously the moving averages. Like a 20 moving average on a 5 minute is one of the main ones that I'll use kind of like as a guide.
Okay.
Above, I'm probably long. Below, I'm probably short. Mm-hmm. In that sense. And then like pivot points under the pivot, it's very hard to be long. You're fading momentum.
Right. Yeah.
And then above the pivot, you should be long. So those are the main things. Also like volume profile. I look at volume profile because I used to do TPO and market profile on futures. But I found that volume profile is pretty good for individual stock.
What does that mean, a volume profile?
So the volume profile is you either can get like a volume profile that tells you where the most volume was traded based on like a price point on the side.
Okay.
So I can use it for a day session, for example. So today's day session, if I open up the volume profile, I just have it on my screen here. Today's day session, the most volume was traded around on the SPY, for example, around 414.60. Right? So that's like a heavy fat zone of attraction, I would say.
That's where everybody wants to get in, then, is what it sounds like, or are they getting out?
Everyone is just pushing trades through that area, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to have a buyer and a seller to complete the transaction. It's just the most transactions at that time happened at that level. So It's a vertical volume rather than the horizontal one you typically see on the bottom of your charts.
What tools are you looking to look at that? Because I'm using Ameritrade, and I don't know if I've ever come across something that showed me that information.
I'm on TradingView actually, and it's in the function key. You can it's one of the.
Is TradingView the one where you get the free widgets for like the websites?
I think so. TradingView is massive. So they probably do a lot of that stuff. They have a lot of built in like indicators and stuff, and like random people would make their own and publish them. But some of the built ins are like the volume profile, for example. I'm not really sure on Ameritrade. Us Canadians don't have the privilege to use that platform.
Oh no, really?
you don't have Canada Trade?
We don't have Canada Trade, no.
Way to take the low hanging fruit, Dan.
It was just hanging there.
Yeah, I'm not too sure on that platform. I'll put in a request for Canada Trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone's bought that website yet.
Well, now we know.
I'm gonna have to spend a little more time on this because I didn't think I just used it for building like charts for like when we write up something on the website or to build a ticker banner.
They got a lot of crap on there that could be useless, but they have a lot of like good stuff too.
Well, yeah, I think it's just a free database kind of thing, right?
So yeah,
people can probably do a lot of stuff with it.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, I know I'm going to get on there and start looking at the volume points.
Yeah. Well, I know one thing Papazov had mentioned when we talked to him was looking at the level 2 data and trying to see where the buy pressure and sell pressure was. I had access to level 2 briefly when I first signed up with Webull because I think it gave me 6 months of that for free.
Yep.
I liked it, but I didn't quite understand how to use it. I mean, I can see the sell walls and the buy walls and see where the resistance was popping up, but I wasn't sure how to actually make a trade off of that. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's a lot better used for day trading, in my opinion. I'm not sure if you guys do a lot of that. I know you're more on the longer term stuff.
We kind of looked at it a little bit, and I think we've dabbled with just about everything. That was one of the things that I mean, because we like to report on stuff too, right? So we'll test different theories or strategies out and let everyone know how it works out for us. So it's definitely something that I'd be interested in taking a look at. I don't know if it's something that long term I would do with a large portion of my portfolio, because like to make sure I know what I'm doing before I do it. Yeah, I think right now we're really big on selling premiums.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Okay, that's a great strategy. If you have like over 100 shares of something, I love doing that.
Yeah.
Selling the options premium, collecting the income. I've only been hit on that once, I think, out of the multitude times I've done it.
You mean you've only had them put to you?
Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I've got a bunch that are going to hit me next week at the end of on Friday. but it's all right. Made enough, I think, selling all the other ones.
Yeah. I always feel really good when I sell a bunch of cash covered puts and then they don't get exercised. I'm like, oh, that's just free money.
Right. Yeah.
Until then, you're twiddling your thumbs, hoping for the best.
That's the hardest part about it is you're waiting. If you're selling them monthlies, then you're done. Like, you know, I'll be done next week, Monday morning.
Yeah. I don't have, like, I'm very, how do you say that, like, spastic when it comes to managing my accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to wait that long for premium.
Right.
I've tried it once, and I vowed that was the last time I would do it. it was just like a headache for me. Like it wasn't like a mismanaged position or anything. Everything made sense, but just in the back of my mind, knowing not to hold, because I was conditioned not to hold futures positions overnight because of these gaps. Right. I was like, holy crap, stocks gap all the time. Yeah, like, I don't know what's going to happen in a month.
That's one thing I've hated about holding something overnight when it's like a real short-term option. Like, I don't think I should hold this overnight. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen tomorrow. Yeah.
So do you guys swing trade options like directly other than premium writing as well, or is it mainly just premium writing?
When you say swing trade, what's the actual definition of that? Is that basically a day trade thing? Or
I'd say over a day, anything over a day, under a year.
I like to look at like when the earnings calls come out and I see a stock put out like, you know, really good earnings, but the expectations are way too high. It falls too hard. I'll try to buy, you know, a couple calls that are like 2 weeks out and see if you catch on the rebound, get a little bit out of that.
Is this before or after the earnings report?
I wait till after.
Okay. Okay.
Because I want to see the actual earnings. I want to see if they were actually good and people are just overreacting or if there's just too much, you know, expectation built into it.
Yeah, well, what I've noticed throughout this past earnings period was, like, just debauchery, because based on, like, fundamentals, earnings reports, all that forward guidance, a lot of growth and tech names, social media names were projected to do really well and have done really well, but just the market just hammered them lower and continued that trend for, like, a week while value just continued to grow.
Yep. I took a little bit of a beating on some of those.
Yeah. That's like the number one thing, in my opinion. If you can time and find when to switch from value to growth, that's when you're going to make the most money. Mm-hmm. Sarah, who's actually an options trader, she trades predominantly on order flow. And through her, I learned a lot about order flow. And she was actually timing the switch from tech to value in about February.
Oh, wow.
Which convinced me to get out of a lot of my tech and growth names. Not enough to not take a hit, but enough to not cry about it overnight. Nice. But yeah, there's... Like, looking into that, if you guys are going to look into anything, options order flow, watching how, like, institutional money moves around, because it really gives you an indication for medium to longer term as well.
Are you talking about, like, the Benzinga options alerts that come out where you can look and see unusual activity?
Not necessarily. Like, it is similar to that. It's kind of similar to unusual activity, but looking at it, there's a program, I think it's called Trade Alert. Let me just Google it just to make sure.
Are you talking about looking at like the ratios, like calls to put ratio?
A lot of that, mainly looking at options flow, how much premium flow and dark pools come into certain positions and how much pull out of them, what sizable options positions are open, because the options market, like market makers have to hedge their positions by buying common stock, right? So if you see a massive inflow of, let's say, 25 million, so this is actually a good example because I remember this happening, on Pinterest, there was a huge position around, I want to say either early February or late March, one of those most recent spikes. And there was a huge position for about $24 million of call option premium bought for a strike of about like 75, I think, which was at the time, I believe, in the money.
Right.
So that would indicate like huge bullish flow. And someone's thinking that this thing's going to be $75 plus the premium paid, which could have been like 20 bucks, let's say. So they're thinking Pins is going to make a move towards 90, right? Mm-hmm. When big positions like that open up, you want to take a look at those, because those are the positions you want to ride out, right? Right.
The hard thing, though, is how do you know whether it's them making a bullish bet or hedging another position?
So it's by analyzing what the position is on this platform called Trade Alert, because you can see all the positions, what that single individual or institution has opened. Is it a hedge? Is it a bullish bet?
So you actually know who's making the bet then too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know if it's bullish directional, you know if it's a hedge, you know if it's a premium grab, you know if it's like nothing. Right. It depends on if you understand how to interpret it. So I'm not the best at it personally. I'm just learning through Sarah because she knows it really well. And sometimes I catch on a little quicker, but I'm still in the learning stages of it. But for example, like those bets were made early February or late March when we had those aggressive pops in growth.
Right.
And then they got liquidated. right? Massive dark pools are just selling like millions and millions, like tens, hundreds of millions of positions. You know, like, holy crap, let me get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So even for the longer term, when you see positions open like that, like I don't have one off the top of my head, but let's make one up, right? On Apple, for example,
right?
On Apple, let's say you see someone opening up a position for $50 million call option for January 2023, right? You want to watch how that position either stays open or starts getting smaller or bigger.
Uh-huh.
So day in and day out, or every week or so, you don't have to watch it every day, obviously, but every week, every month, you'll notice, like, is there a big change in that? You can set alerts. Is there going to be a big change in that?
Right.
And that's how you can kind of follow where money's flowing out of and flowing into.
Huh.
Which website were you using to look at that information?
It's called Trade Alert. It's like a platform.
That's awesome.
The platform itself visually looks terrible, but it's amazing information.
Right.
It's one of those things, you know, like where institutional, like boomers use it and they're like okay with it.
Right. So they're not going to update it because it still works.
Like Notepad?
No. Yeah, they don't care.
Okay, you've mentioned the dark pool a couple times, and I think that's been kind of on everyone's mind lately. I think there was some recent, I don't know, was it the SEC that just had a new ruling that closed down some of these?
I didn't read it. I saw something about the SEC about that. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know there has been some kind of like OTC talk.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, and on some kind of...
I think it was a couple weeks ago, actually, but I think they shut down a couple, because there was an amendment or a request for an extension for like TD Ameritrade and some of the other bigger brokers to keep their exchanges open or their dark pools open until people can find a sufficient replacement. But what I understand the purpose of that is so that way like a big name can offload or buy a large block without alerting the rest of the market that they're making this move. Is that basically accurate?
Yeah, which is kind of BS, because if you start hiding positions like that, then like it's they wanted to kill the retail crowd from the beginning, especially once all this stuff blew up, which like I mean the GME, the short squeeze that happened when everyone understood what a short float meant back in January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they like ever since that happened, like everyone's just trying to pin it on retail investors when like it's not really retail investors.
No.
Right? Like how am I gonna move a single stock name by myself, or me and a couple of other friends are gonna? It doesn't make any sense. They're just trying to like weed retail out more and more.
It's kind of what it feels like, doesn't it?
Some reason, like I don't know what the like what the reasoning is behind it. I've heard that too many millionaires had been made. And that's like I'm not even kidding.
Oh.
Like I legitimately heard that there were too many millionaires being made throughout all this market stuff, whether it was through crypto or the short squeeze that happened early this year.
Mm-hmm.
There was too many damn millionaires, and now they're thinking of ways of how to stifle retail.
I hate hearing that.
I feel like it's like a 50s American segregated water fountain thing,
right?
You know, it's like no, you can't use our water fountain. No, we've been using this water fountain for years. It's just ours. Get out of here.
You don't know how to drink that water. You might hurt yourself.
Yeah, exactly. The water won't go away, right? The water is going to be there for a very long time.
Exactly.
But you still don't know how to use it. And I'm not going to teach you how to use it. So get out of here.
Yeah.
But there's enough water for everyone. But you just can't have any.
Mm, so, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like.
So are you following the AMC thing that's going on now?
I haven't followed too much of the AMC thing, but the GME thing, in terms of massive 800 calls, I forget what the expiry was. I think sometime in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
It's starting to get open. And like people are saying that that's what propelled the first short squeeze, where it was like
a massive gamma squeeze.
Yeah, exactly. A massive gamma squeeze for market makers to hedge their bet. Then they ended up buying it up. I don't think that was the case, to be honest. I think that had something to do with it. But I think also institutional money saw that.
Yeah, I think you had to have some institutional money because retail just doesn't have that buying power push something.
I think institutional money saw the flow coming in on it, like the huge positions getting opened up. And they're like, hey, you know what? We can move this and really screw some people over. Other institutional people. That
Do you think AMC has the same potential that GameStop has?
Well, AMC, like now after the squeeze, so like AMC was like a $2-3 company, right? And I was
in December.
I was looking to I bought shares, not many shares, because of, it was a reopening play in my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. And I bought it, like, let's say, like at 350, I think it was, around, I think it was October even. Okay. I think it was around October 2020. And I was like,
I think
hey,
that's right. Cause Dan was playing some call options on them about the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking like it's a reopening play. And then it started catching up like with the Twitter crowd, right? There was traction. And I'm like, okay, well, what do these big Twitter guys know that I don't know? I'm going to like size in on it, bought some more at like 250, whatever it was. Not like a crazy position, nothing ludicrous by any means, like a five-figure position, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not like massive though. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm gonna cut my losses. If I lose like 30% of this, like it is what it is, like it's gone,
right?
And the first pop, like I had these blind limits, what I like to call them, which are just limits that I had set like God knows when, you know, like to hit, to sell some of the position out.
A take profit mark, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm setting these at like $5, $6, $7, $8, $10, all the way up to 12 in increments.
Mm-hmm.
And then like this thing happens like overnight, this like crazy squeeze, like holy shit, what happened? Right. And they all got flushed out, right? Like all the profit taking got out. And I'm like, okay, like that was like the only sizable money that I think I made from this whole debacle between like GME and AMC and all that squeezing. But like the point is like they're, I don't know what the position sizing right now in terms of options is on AMC,
mm-hmm.
but it does have potential, right? Like GME, I told you guys I had like a story from financial institutions here in Canada.
Yeah.
Where I know someone that works at one of the big banks and he's getting phone calls, and it's these, I don't even know if they're kids or not, but they sounded like kids based on how he described it. And like, I don't know, like early 20s, let's say. And they were calling him and asking him, hey, can I put a limit on GME to sell it at $1 million a share?
Jesus.
And he's like, what do you mean $1 million a share? Like what's going on? And he got one phone call and he's like, wait, this like someone's like pulling my leg. This is BS. And he kept getting them. Like he kept getting them from like older people. And he's like, what the fuck's going on? Who the hell's gonna sell GME at like $1 million a share, right? And then like literally a week after that, you start seeing 800 calls, like hit right. the books, 800 call on GME. Like, what the hell's going on here? But I don't like, and today, like GME squeeze, I'm just looking at just basic chart, just a chart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, based on a chart, like GME could squeeze. And I've seen a lot of interest in GME recently by like players that kind of like.
I think it just doubled its volume today. It's up about 12% right now.
And honestly, like it could go back to the 500-600 area.
There's a lot of people that don't think that it's actually been covered yet. They think that a lot of the action is synthetic on it. They think that a lot of people thought that retail actually already owned the entire float.
The entire float retail? That's a little ludicrous.
I mean, it's only 70 million shares, and if it was trading at $5 not too long ago, I mean, is it that crazy?
Yeah, but did retail know about that back then?
I don't know. Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good point. I think there is starting to really jump on back in the 17 mark if you look at Reddit. The thing that surprises me about GME, though, looking at their, and I don't know how out of date this is, but I finally saw the institutional ownership percentage finally drop below 100.
That where did you see that? I don't even doubt that that's like.
That's on TD Ameritrade. It's showing 97.28% right now, and that's the first time I've seen it below 100%, and probably since January.
Do you know how frequently they update them? Because usually they come out like once a month, depending on the platform that you've got.
Mm-hmm. I think it probably wouldn't be any more than every 2 weeks, but okay, even if there's overlap, that's still a very high.
Especially 100%.
For something that's only showing a 21% roughly short interest right now, or as of April 30th.
Interesting.
Yeah, I still think there might be something going on with GME. I don't know if I believe the extent of the naked shorting that everyone seems to think is going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find that a little ludicrous to think that they would allow something like that to happen.
That's what I'm thinking too. But I heard that a lot of like institutional money doubled down on their shorts after they got squeezed like that because they just couldn't cover them.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of agree with you in terms of like I don't know if it has the potential to make another squeeze back to where it did, or if there's that much naked shorting going on, to be honest.
I mean, that's kind of what it all relies on. But I mean, if you, I don't know if you saw any of the comments from Aaron Adams, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
CEO of AMC.
Yeah.
He, when they just did their earnings on the earnings statement, there's 3.2 million owners in retail of AMC, and they own 4/5 of the company. And that was as of March 11th.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. So maybe there is something to it. I don't know.
There could be something to it in that case. But the short squeeze would happen with just more buyers driving it up to those short covering levels.
Right.
Right. Like there just has to be attraction to make that squeeze happen. So like, let's say, I don't know, these institutional traders say, you know what, I'm going to cover above 220, for example. Mm-hmm. So it could go up to 219, 218, just muddle around there and look like it's squeezing like crazy. But until it reaches that threshold area, it's not really going to do anything. That's what happened with the original squeeze. I think the original squeeze number was in the hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the institutionals were like, okay, like we got to do something about this.
Yeah.
So based on a chart, I don't really know what the numbers are. I haven't really dived into it too much. Based on a chart, it does look like it has that potential to go for another run.
I know. I'm hoping I don't have to go back to work. So
right.
I don't have all my eggs in that basket, but I definitely took a lottery ticket on it.
Yeah. AMC, if GME goes, AMC's probably going to go with it.
Well, I got a little bit of both of them still. I figured, yeah. What the hell.
Nice. A good hedge.
But not necessarily a hedge. I think that's kind of a double down.
Yeah, right.
God, what was the other number with AMC that I saw that kind of blew my mind? Oh, the cost to borrow. I think yes. as of last week, at some point, it was up around like 240% interest.
Oh, whoa.
I think Trey on Trey's Trades mentioned that the short sell button on Webull had been disabled since fucking January.
Whoa.
This is a extremely hard to borrow stock. That fee rate had been basically skyrocketing over the last week and a half or 2 weeks.
That's like trying to buy crypto on Coinbase.
I learned that too, the hard way.
Yeah, me too, man.
What is this $5 charge for $100 of coin?
I Googled it just to see how much one Bitcoin would cost. Not that I was going to buy a full freaking Bitcoin at $60,000.
Yeah.
But I think it was around like $1,000.
Oh, that's what their fee is?
That's what, to buy one full Bitcoin, I think the fee was around $1,000.
I might need to buy some shares of Coinbase because it sounds like they got a really good profit model.
Yeah. Right. until everyone figures out that you can purchase crypto without getting destroyed on a spread like that.
Yeah, I put, you know, a couple $100 in there just to see what it was all about. We've been talking to a lot of people about it. I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be putting any more into it. I was curious if I was going to get that same charge when I tried to sell it.
I think so, because there would be a spread, right? It's kind of like Forex in that sense.
Like, you can't give away 10% of your fucking profits and ever hope to make money on anything.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Dan, you got, what else you got?
I wanted to ask a little bit more about, I don't know. I don't have my notes here.
No.
Ask away.
No. So when you play around with options, mm-hmm. do you follow any of like the traditional name strategies? Do you ever like drop an iron condor? You ever straddle or strangle? You ever do anything like that?
So very rarely, to be honest. I kind of like to just do straight calls or puts. I do like the I don't know the exact technical terms for this, but I would say like the inverse iron condor when you have a post earnings flush. So like an earnings, the options volatility would increase, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that would make the option more expensive. So there's one strategy where you can buy a straddle, for example, a month or a month and a half out of the earnings period to ride mm-hmm. that volatility. So even if it doesn't go anywhere, the stock itself, or it goes down or up, as long as the volatility of that stock ramps up towards earnings, then you'll make money, right?
Mm.
Well, there's the opposite of that. After the earnings, or just before, a day or two before, when the volatility on the earnings is at its peak.
Right.
Right. So let's say a stock would have on average 20% implied volatility. Mm-hmm. Right. And the day before earnings, it's at 80. Now, what happens on the earnings report? It's an uncertain event, right? People right. increase volatility because they don't know what's going to come out. So when that news drops, volatility dies out because the uncertainty is gone.
Yeah.
Right. So what I would do is sell an iron condor, so the reverse of that strategy. So, or I would sell a put and a call at the same strike. Mm-hmm. And that would cause the volatility flush to happen and those things to expire pretty much worthless that week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, I would say, the deepest I would go with these. And other than like selling premium on stock that I own, for example, like I've got a crap ton of Ford.
Yep.
I'll sell calls on Ford, right, to generate premium.
Yeah.
You sell them out of the money trying to get them to expire worthless?
Yeah, exactly. On like a weekly basis. I don't do it every week. If it makes sense, like if I think the market's going to kind of stagnate or die, I'll sell calls on Ford, for example, or on Palantir. I used to do it on Fubo before I decided enough was enough and I cut the position.
Palantir's got some juicy premiums right now.
Yeah.
I think I was getting around $1.80 for a $21 contract. That was last week, I think Friday.
Right. It's great. It's great when they have high IV, but yep, they won't really move too much. So if you sell them like further out the money for a weekly expiry, you're
right,
high probability of collecting that premium.
I don't even mind if they take my shares because they'll just turn around and sell a put the next week.
Yeah. That. Fair enough. I want to hold on to these, though.
Well, I mean, are you long? Are they, if they were to be sold, would you be getting long-term capital gains tax on them, or?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely worth holding on to. I wouldn't want to fuck around with that.
Yeah, I have high hopes for Palantir. I got in close to the IPO.
I bought at the IPO, and then it went nowhere for a couple weeks, and then I got bored with it, and I sold it. I was sick of seeing it lose.
Dude, I thought you were an investor.
I'm in it now. What? Oh.
Zing! Take that.
I am on other stuff.
I call myself an every other day trader.
Ah, okay. That's fair. If it's there, it's there, right? Take the opportunity.
Yeah, I have a portion of the account that we use for trying to do other stuff to make money faster.
Nice.
And then I have the main account that's used for long-term holdings.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I don't want to blow myself out, but.
Yeah, I'm juggling multiple different accounts for multiple different things. Like, I kind of agree with you. I don't want, like, all my crap in one account.
Mm-hmm.
If I have, like, a growth and tech account, for example, that is almost all in cash. Mm-hmm. I've got, like, a long-term retirement one, a swing trading one, like, a different long-term one, day trading one, whatever it is. But, yeah, if anyone's listening to any of that, split up your accounts.
Yeah, I need to finish splitting them up. I got so many different accounts though for different retirements, different jobs I've worked at. Give me another one. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's different.
I've got all the retirement stuff. I've got three different trading accounts right now, as far as like just trading stocks.
Yeah.
But I need to split up my main one so I can take my long term holdings and put them somewhere else. The problem is I don't want to lose my buying power, my margin. That's the only thing that's held me back.
Do you use margin a lot, or other than the covered call or whatever, premium selling?
The only time I use margin is if there's just an opportunity that I think is too good and it's going to be like another week before I can close something else out.
Okay.
Like just as like a short term, like, you know, get me to this week where I can close this out after this event happens.
Interesting.
I hate carrying it because I just take credit in general.
Fair. That's understandable. Oh, you guys talked about Jumia quite a bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the take on that? I'm interested in following up on that.
So it's I think the way they describe it is the African Amazon.
Yeah.
I think Baba is probably a more apt comparison because it's still a developing nation. You know, Amazon's in America. We've already quite developed. I think it really all depends on how you think Africa is going to develop as far as like a middle class. Are they going to follow along like India is starting to, like China is already kind of done? And then who's going to fill that void for that e-commerce giant?
Yeah.
Because right now there's nobody there. There's nobody to try to take market share away from Jumia. They have the entire market to themselves.
That's an interesting idea there, because Africa is what? It's over a billion people for sure.
Right. And then I think even, isn't Nigeria like, is that the one that's on the upswing that's got its own trading and indexes? And I think it even has its own like kind of Bollywood.
Nigeria's got a very strong oil economy. Mm. So that's something to consider in the future as well, should that be a like dying resource, for example, in the next like 10 to 15 years, right? Because a lot of the African economy hinges on a lot of that oil production.
Well, you got to think, I mean, oil is not just gasoline. I mean, everything that's plastic is made out of oil too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, even if we do shift to EVs, I think even if, you know, combustion engines start going away, it's not going to be the end of oil.
Oh yeah, like there's a lot of production alone, mm-hmm. right? Like even to create like batteries, right? For those EVs,
right?
A lot of like the infrastructure behind it, right? Like it's kind of counterintuitive in a certain sense, but like longer term, like you'll start slowly eradicating oil. And speaking of oil, what is your take on the reopening sector coming to life in over the last few months, like oil, flight, retail, stuff like that?
I'm worried that a lot of it's already been baked in, because mm-hmm. I think didn't airlines already see a really large move over the last like 3 months? Mm-hmm. Oil is still seems to be kind of lagging though. I've finally seen like BP, British Petroleum, finally starting to kind of climb up. Yeah. I've got a pipeline that I like in my long-term holdings, Enterprise Products. Yeah, EPD gives a really nice dividend too, by the way. They've been finally starting to kind of climb up. I mean, yeah, opening everything up can only be good for that. It looks I think a lot of that's already kind of been baked in. I think with the markets, it seems like people are speculating on it happening, you know, 3 months before anybody even thinks it's going to happen, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like look at all the different retail stores that are trading at like all-time highs.
Like XRT, the retail ETF. George and I actually had a running joke about XRT because we usually play it throughout the before the Christmas period for options.
Is that the one that everybody's on Twitter talking about? I keep seeing all the ads for
XRT. I'm not sure. It's the spider ETF, yeah, for retail.
Okay.
All the retails on that are on the S&P.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the thing used to trade around 40, 50 bucks when we used to play it for that like Christmas ramp, the Santa Claus rally type thing where everyone would spend their money buying retail stuff, right?
Nice. Yeah.
And I looked at it about a month ago. It was like $90. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, geez.
I was like, this seems a little too inflated.
Yeah. I think I think one of the stocks that one of the first ones I ever played an earnings play on was Nordstrom. And that was trading at like $43 a share today. I think I bought it at 16, and that was less than 6 months ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of that, I think, has already been baked in.
Interesting. I do agree with you in terms of the retail stuff, because, like, in Canada, like, our economy is insignificant in comparison to yours, and just because we're shut down, mm-hmm. a lot of us just turn a blind eye to, like, the reopening stuff, because we're like, oh, yeah, we got a lot of reopening to do, you know? Like, who cares about our retail stores here? Like, retail, I think, in the States, especially because a lot of things reopened, I think that's a little overbaked, like you said. But I think there is still potential in travel, because even though they did see a surge, mm-hmm. travel is, like 70% of oil use in, like, the States, I believe, is for airlines and travel, which are still expected to see over, like, hundreds of percent growth in the coming year.
Well, and we're just about getting to that point now where people start taking all those summer trips, too. So, yeah, there definitely is potential. Things are finally starting to reopen. I think the CDC finally, like, loosened the guidelines on wearing mm-hmm. masks mm-hmm. indoors yeah. and outdoor. Yeah. I know that's one thing that keeps me from going out too much.
Oh, man. I got yelled at in a hallway here for not having my mask for talking on the phone.
I got my vaccine. I should be good.
Should be good. All right, Kyle, you wanna move on to some of our fun and games?
Yeah, I guess we're getting close to it. Okay, so I got some. I think we're gonna call this kind of Ask a Canadian.
Okay, how does that sound? You're gonna help your friends down south of you, because we want to understand our northern neighbors.
All right, let's see if I know any of this.
It's kind of a mix of that and a little bit of trivia.
Okay, cool.
All right, so the trivia here is: what's the most purchased grocery item in Canada?
Oh, God. I want to say maple syrup because that sounds obvious.
No, it is not maple syrup.
Most purchased grocery item in Canada. What the hell? Do you guys... So this is like a college thing. I think it's either Mr. Noodle or Kraft Dinner.
Kraft Dinner is the answer.
Really?
Okay, so what is Kraft Dinner for you guys? I asked George Papazov this question, and he just gave me a story about making some while he was late for a class.
Yeah, he got a little philosophical about it.
Oh, yeah, George goes deep into the metaphors and the talking. Kraft Dinner is disgusting, in my opinion. A lot of people would disagree with me. It's the concept is just like, I don't know, repulsive. Anyways, it's like noodles, like macaroni. That okay. They come in a box, and they come with a package of this, like, powdered cheese.
Okay, so it is Kraft, okay.
Yeah.
It's Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. So you, like, boil it and do whatever you will, and then you put the disgusting powdered cheese, and you swirl it around, you throw some milk in that, and butter, and, like, ketchup, I don't know, whatever.
And butter. Don't forget the butter. That's my favorite, by the way. That's the only mac and cheese I like.
It's like a student's poor version of mac and cheese, though.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, so it is that.
Awesome. But
people have like their own special ways of preparing it, though, don't they?
Yeah, like people throw like gallons of like ketchup in there, like weird milk, a lot of weird crap. I never liked it because I'm like George. I came from an immigrant family, so like my parents did not buy any of that stuff. They were like repulsed by it. They're like, there's no way anyone should eat this. Oh, that's
hilarious. Okay, well, speaking of that, I think this was Dan's question. What in the hell are butter tarts?
Butter tart? I don't know. A butter tart. Can I Google it?
Yeah, I heard some Canadian people talking about a butter tart.
Oh, this looks like it's like a pastry. Is it Canadian?
That was my assumption. Maybe it's not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think it is. I'm just Googling it right now to see what it looks like. This is, so in Toronto at least, we have these like Portuguese tarts actually. Uh-huh. Because there's like a pretty prominent Portuguese neighborhood here, and they look like these, but they have like custard and stuff in the middle. They're pretty good. It's a pastry that, I guess the butter tart has some kind of like buttery custard in there, maybe with like pecans. It looks pretty good.
That sounds interesting. All right. Okay. This one's my question. Are you a fan of South Park?
I watched it when I was younger. I don't really watch TV anymore, but like when I was in like high school, I'd watch it.
All right. This is about, I don't know if maybe you saw this episode or not, but the one where they're off to see the Prime Minister of Canada, to follow the only road. So do you remember what Newfoundland was known for in that episode?
Newfoundland.
Yeah, you had the Mountie who had to ride a sheep because they took away his horse from budget cuts. The mime was not allowed, the French Canadian, he was not allowed to drink wine anymore. And then the Newfie was upset about something else.
Was it the sodomy ban?
Yes, it was. Now, my question for you is that true? Is that a big deal in Newfoundland?
So I've never been to Newfoundland. Canada's massive, dude.
Yeah, I know.
It's so damn big, and I have only been to Quebec and Alberta and British Columbia. Newfoundland's on like the other side. My dad landed in Newfoundland when he came to Canada. And he was like, I'm never going back. That place cold as hell. I don't know. It could have been the sodomy.
Was he sodomy? Yeah, that's good.
He might have skipped that part.
All right. Last question I have for you then. All right. So Canada is known as being like super polite, right?
Yeah.
So if Canada really is that polite, why are hockey players so mean?
Because hockey players stopped going to school after they were 15. They didn't learn any etiquette.
Oh, that's right. They go to billet homes, don't they?
They go to billet homes. They go to the OHL when they're in like grade 10 or something, like crazy.
I was wondering how does that work? Do they still go to school?
They claim to go to school. I don't know how good the schooling is or like what the schooling is, but they, like, if they're good enough, they kind of just like skip all that stuff. You know, like I feel like the States has like a slightly better protocol where they at least like go to college.
They get to college and then they don't get an education. That's when they focus on sports.
Yeah, but they finish their high school education. I do think hockey players do finish their high school, but it's probably like something in like the online learning.
But it's almost like homeschooling though, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It must be something like that.
Okay, so it is like that. I was wondering how that works. They get like billet families to live with. They don't even live with their own.
Yeah, or they go to school in like the like little towns that they stay with, like the families and whatnot. I'm not sure, but or maybe they've just been hit in the head too many times. I don't know.
Hey, they were.
So what is your hockey name in Canada?
I've never played hockey, so. Just like George, I'm from Bulgaria, and I'm a big like soccer guy, actually, like super European family. Mm. So never really played hockey. Skated for the first time this last year, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. How'd you do?
Terrible. I have a torn ACL from soccer, and I was just like too scared to move on the ice. I'm like, I'm gonna tear this thing again. I'm gonna tear the other one.
Right.
Oh, man.
They have to come collect me, scoop me from the ice.
Yeah, I actually played soccer as a youth and am a terrible ice skater as well. So, solidarity.
Nice.
I hated playing organized sports because you don't get to play. You have to practice all the time. Practice sucks.
Who are you, Allen Iverson?
What's that?
Who are you, Allen Iverson?
Basically, yeah. I just wanted to go out to the... I'd go out to the park every Saturday and just throw a football around. It was just as much fun.
Oh, yeah.
And then I joined the military, and the military felt like a lot like football practice. But, yeah, that was a six-year mistake.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
All right, any closing thoughts you want to leave us with?
Closing thoughts.
Yeah. Plug, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about your online community.
Oh, yeah. Hit us up at community.tradeproacademy.com. Everyone gets to talk to us. You can DM me on that Echofin server. You can talk to us there. The community is growing. It's relatively new. All of our current members are in there, and a lot of new members that have been following us for a while and kind of want to see what goes on in TradePro are in there right now. We talk a lot about like psychology and stuff. I don't know if George talked to you guys about like psychology. And
I think we talked a lot about psychology. Yeah. And that's kind of been a recurring theme, it seems like, with all these different guests that we've had on.
All the professionals we talked to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's a big thing. Always work on that psychology. Always like strive to have that like winning mindset. Don't put yourself down. But we talk about a lot of that stuff in the community. You can follow us on social media, just Trade Pro Academy on any social media, YouTube, Twitter, whatever it is.
Yeah, congratulations on hitting 300, by the way. So you're at 320 now.
Yeah, and the milestone has been reached. I'm thinking of the next ploy to get more people to engage with us. No, I'm kidding, not ploy. But
that's okay.
Well, George and I are thinking of some kind of competition. I'm going to film a video for everyone, whoever's listening. I'm just going to break down everything I know about options and how I day trade them.
Yes.
It might be like a 2-3 hour video.
Oh, I've been looking forward to seeing that. You want to put that up on YouTube? Or
I'm going to put it up everywhere. I'm working on it. It's taking longer than I thought, but this week. So if you guys want to see more, what is it, like competitions that involve us spilling everything that we know, check us out on Twitter.
Awesome. Nice.
If you need consequences, Dan and I just had to take the SATs for losing.
Oh my god, I listened to that. I listened to that podcast. You guys did really well. What the hell? I didn't know what SATs really were, to be honest.
I didn't either. I never took it.
Me neither. But you guys scored in like a high percentile, no?
Yeah.
We brushed up to the 90th percentile.
My wife graded it, though. We need to post the results so that way people can call us out if it was graded wrong.
Oh, man, that's great.
All right. Well, we'll put links to all that. Yeah, if you can, so just a note when you got that video completed. Yeah, we'll put a link to it in this episode description.
Yeah, we'll share that video for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm a blast of this podcast everywhere I know. You're going to get a lot of people listening to this because I thoroughly enjoyed listening to you guys before I jumped onto this, and it was a pleasure jumping onto this. Oh, you guys are great.
Thank you. Well, you've been a fantastic guest. Yes. Yeah, we want to have you back for sure.
Yes.
For sure. If I blow an account or something, or make a terrible mistake, I know who to call.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. You guys can exploit me for that.
Well, Dan can console you. He's got plenty of empathy there.
That's what I do best.
Perfect.
All right, Dan, you want to take us home?
Oh, yeah. Oh, folks, we're so glad you joined us for this fantastic interview. You know, we're going to have plenty of links. Go check out Trade Pro Academy. Go check out their online community. We're definitely in the future going to be sharing the links to those options videos for sure. Make sure to follow them on Twitter. You'll get updated. Make sure to follow us on Twitter too. On the Discord and the Facebook.
Please.
don't forget about us.
You can join their account and you can still join ours too. We won't be jealous.
Exactly.
Yep. There's room for everybody in the China shop. It's a big shop. We're just so glad that you're here and you joined us, and you know, we'll be coming back at you soon, but today we have to sadly close up the shop, and until next time, happy trades.
Bye, folks. Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2bullsinachinashop.com. Make sure you check us out, download us on any streaming network, blah 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 blah. You know what to do. Great, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.